This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. Big show coming your way this hour. Going to be joined by Rich Lowry, maybe a special guest with some breaking news. We're still following a lot of things going on Capitol Hill today, including the aftermath of the Robert Hur interview. And we see the President of the United States is going to be in action today campaigning. Because it's all official. We know it's going to be happening in 2024 for the race for the presidency. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Well, I think that what you saw today was really a great victory. I mean, this is the nomination that's been clinched this early in two decades. The president had a great day today. The Hur report, basically today, case closed.
There it is. Mitch Landrieu says case closed. Here we go. Biden versus Trump as both officially line up delegates needed to become their party's nominee. We look at the stakes, the game plans, and what the next 8 months will be like.
Number two.
Guys, if you haven't called your representatives, call your representatives. There's so many small businesses on here. People are surviving off this app.
I was like, hey, I'm calling to stop the ban on TikTok. I will financially drown without this app.
And tell them, do not ban TikTok.
Yeah, you have to ban TikTok. The vote looms on TikTok as ByteDance chiefs swoop into town to try and save its spying device. The House should have 300 votes to force a sale or face a ban. Meanwhile, the Senate, it's going to be a tougher go. We'll talk about who's in and who's not.
Number one.
The Hur report represents the complete and total exoneration of President Biden.
The special counsel exonerates President Biden.
Did you reach a conclusion that this man was outright innocent?
That conclusion is not reflected in my report, sir.
Robert Hur stands strong against a blizzard of accusations in both sides and mischaracterizations of the Biden classified document report. What we learned from the testimony, the transcripts, the Biden interviews, and what it means for 2024 and the Trump case, because Jack Smith's got his eyes set on taking out Donald Trump. So we've been hearing over the last few days the collapse of the Haitian government. We hear the resignation of the prime minister. We know that his gangs have basically taken over the country. There is no government that we can speak of, and just about 1,000 cops. What if you're on the ground and you're American? What if you use your time and money to form a foundation and an orphanage to help save kids? Well, you're stuck. And that's what happened to Mitch Albom, who was swooped and saved along with others, thanks to Corey Mills and some quick-thinking congressional leaders. With us right now is the best-selling author, talk show host, and philanthropist, and he's the founder of this foundation, Mitch Albom. Mitch, glad you're okay. What have the last few days been like for you?
They've been crazier than even normal stuff in Haiti. Brian, we were I brought down eight other people along with my wife and myself on this trip. I go to our orphanage to Have Faith Haiti. Orphanage since for the last 14 years, as you know, we've talked about it. I'm there every month. We've got 60 kids. We've got 40 staff members. And I brought down eight volunteers with me on this trip. And as soon as we got down there, the gangs started breaking into prisons and releasing all the prisoners. And next thing you know, the airports were shut. The ports were shut. The roads were shut. The borders were shut. And there was no way out. And they were very scared, obviously, as I would imagine they would be. You know, I've been there a little longer. I'm kind of used to it. But we began to try to figure a way that we could get out when it looked like they weren't going to be opening that airport anytime soon. And in the wee hours of Tuesday morning, I don't even know what today is. Today's Wednesday. So I guess yesterday morning, we were able to evacuate at 3 o'clock in the morning. Thanks to the efforts of Corey Mills, Lisa McLean, and some people who worked independently. You know, you mentioned they're congresspeople, but they worked independently to do this effort.
Because we know that they choppered out most of the embassy staff But there's a lot of civilians on the ground. I mean, how big was the group you were with, and how concerned are you with the kids left behind?
Well, our group was 10, and we were raced into this helicopter in the dead of night because the gangs will shoot at helicopters, and you have to go at night because someone will film a helicopter and say, oh, the helicopter was coming there, and that's Ariel Henry, the ex-prime minister, is trying to get into the country, and next thing you know, it's all over the internet in Haiti, and people are rushing to that site, and, you know, gangs and angry citizens and all that. So it has to be done, you know, when nobody can see and when you can get out fast. And the 10 of us were shoved into this helicopter that had 4 seats in it. And so we were basically just a ball of people. It was right out of one of those movies, you know, go, 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 go. And you're in and you're up and you're flying out. But I'm extraordinarily concerned, and mostly concerned for the children we left behind. And it broke my heart to leave. And my wife and I really didn't want to go, but we were responsible for those 8 other people, too. And I couldn't really say, well, go ahead, just get on this helicopter. I don't know where it's going, but go ahead. We want to get back there immediately. And we spent the 8 days that we were kind of captive there stocking up on food and on water, trying to get black market fuel, because it's quite possible that, you know, with the government gone, everything could fall into chaos there, and then you can't get anything. And so we stocked up with, you know, hopefully a month's worth of supplies. We asked people to help us on the internet, which they did, and we continue to need. And I'm extraordinarily concerned for our kids. And the minute I can get back in there, I will.
It's called the Have Faith Haiti Orphanage. And right. And Mitch, the one thing I asked you last time when you were on your book tour is, you know, when you go back there with security, like, you go, well, I have to come in. I have to come in with my own security. So you don't. The government's not going to help you, and there's anarchy in the streets. Ever since really the prime minister got assassinated, and we find out the first lady, I guess his wife, was in on it. And next thing you know, the other prime minister just resigned after going to Kenya and disappearing. Kenya's supposed to help out. Now they can't get their own congressional approval to help out. We have promised $200 million. I don't know where the $200 million is going to. Who would get it?
Well, everything's kind of on hold because of that. It was the president who was assassinated. Then the prime minister took over. He did nothing. The gangs ran rampant. He went to Kenya to try to get help. And then they basically locked him out of the country. The gangs just said, well, now we own the airports. You can't come in. We own the ports. You can't come in. What they're really protecting against, Brian, is that force from Kenya coming in, because they know if they come, they're coming to kill them. And so that's what worries me now is, you know, everyone thinks, well, they got Ariel Henry to resign. Yay. Well, that was, you know, kind of part of the argument that these gangs wanted. But what they really want is control, and they don't want to get killed. And so I don't see that they're going to be opening the airport anytime soon if a delegation from Kenya is going to be coming to hunt them down. And meanwhile, you know, our leaders and the Caribbean leaders got together and said, okay, well, here's the new transition plan for Haiti. Let's get 7 people from Haiti, different factions, together, and then they'll pick a prime minister. Well, not surprisingly, they met yesterday, and all they did was argue. And last I heard, they couldn't settle on anybody. And so you really have a government, Brian, that there's nobody in charge. I mean, heaven forbid if something happened to our president. The vice president is sworn in, sure, and boom, you have leadership. Imagine there's nobody in charge. And so gangs can run rampant. Police are totally demoralized. They burned down the police station. When we were there this past time, I mean, every night the gunfire was, it wasn't just a straight bullet here or there. It was, assault rifles and things going off. They're burning police stations, burning government buildings. The organization that oversees orphanages, they have a building. It was destroyed by regular people who were desperate to find a place to hide because they were chased out of their homes. And so all the records of our orphanage and all the other orphanages and everything were all destroyed, and they keep everything on paper there. And so I don't even know if, you know, once we get back there, all the licenses and all that, you have to start all over again. So it's madness. It's something that we can't imagine. Right. And what we went through, not being able to leave, you know, being in a country where you can't get out, is something that no American has ever gone through. But, you know, you go through it once and you realize that's how Haitians live all the time. And that's just shouldn't be tolerated.
Mitch Album, our guest, who was able to get, thanks to Corey Mills and Congresswoman Lisa McClain and others, is able to get out of Haiti last night, choppered out along with others in his group. So when you knew to call the congresswoman, did you just say that's my local congresswoman in Michigan? I'm going to give her a call. How did you know to do that? Because she immediately called Corey Mills.
Yeah, I didn't. What happened was some local Detroit stations knew that I was down there, and with our contingent was down there. I did an interview with them saying, you know, nobody's coming for us. You know, I mean, when we called the embassy, they said, well, there's nothing we can do. And so that story got out to Lisa McClain, who I don't know. I've never met her before. And she got a hold of me and said, you know, we're going to put something together privately to get you out. Then next thing I know, I'm hearing from Corey Mills. We had several failed attempts, Brian, to get out before that, you know, with different people who said that they could organize something. One time our group at 6 o'clock in the morning was standing on a hill where a helicopter was supposed to come, you know, naked in the sunshine there going, come on, come on, come on, come on. And it never came. And we had to turn around and get back into cars and race armored cars and get back to our orphanage. But Corey Mills, I guess, has some experience doing this kind of thing. I don't know him either before this, but I got to know him really well. And he was in the helicopter, you know, when we got in. I don't know. I guess that's what Congress people do when they're not in Congress. They just fly in helicopters.
I think he's special forces, too. I mean,
yeah.
So a couple of things. You know more than anyone, that's revenue. Mitch Albom would get a lot of money, and your group would get a lot of money if you're an American hostage. And that's what they use for revenue. Was that in the back of your mind?
Oh, yeah. You mean being kidnapped?
Yes.
Oh, constantly. I mean, that's why we're not just this week. It's why we only travel in armored cars, and we don't tell people when we're there. And we never go out. I mean, I go every month, and we go from the airport to the orphanage, and that's it. And then we go from the orphanage to the airport back. But it's not a way to live, you know, in fear. And Brian, they're not looking to just kidnap me. They're more looking to kidnap regular Haitians who don't have a dollar to their name, and they get their cell phone, and they start going through the numbers in it and calling and say, we're going to kill this person unless you give us, you know, $100,000. And the person says, I don't have $100,000. We'll give us $50,000. We'll give us $5,000. We'll give us your refrigerator, you know, and that's the level of the kidnapping that goes on there. So we constantly live in fear of that. But I mean, if I didn't go because of that, I'd never go. That's been going on for years, which is why these gangs need to be dealt with. They need outside intervention. And I know nobody has an appetite for American intervention in foreign places, but this is right off of our shores. And if that country falls, the neighboring Caribbean countries are in danger. That's what happens, you know, when there's an unrest in a region. And, you know, we did occupy Haiti in the early 1900s for 15 years. You're a student of history very well. You know this. We wrote their constitution. We have an obligation to take care of that country and its precious children, especially the ones that we see every day.
We asked for volunteers to help, and Kenya stepped up, and they don't seem to be able to quite pull it off. Does it blow you away that the embassy wasn't there for you and that the U.S. has really let it get this bad?
Well, I'm not political that way, and I don't want to besmirch the embassy other than to say, yes, in our case, they did not help us. I don't know what they could do. I mean, I've been in trouble down there many other times. We were there when the president was assassinated and the country shut down. The embassy wasn't helping us then either. I've just assumed that there's very little that they can do. I will say that, you know, we were in touch with them and they said, just stay there. We'll keep you updated if there's anything. Just stay there. You know, we're having discussions. Just stay there. And then they flew out. You know, we read the next morning that they evacuated in the middle of the night. But I don't know what they were supposed to do. I just do know that America as a country could do more for the country of Haiti, not me and not, you know, not us, but for the country of Haiti. I wish they would do more than just give money, because we're the biggest power in the region. You know, Kenya is not next to Haiti or anywhere near Haiti. I'm amazed that Kenya continues to want to get involved in this, but they're not coming until there's a government. And I don't blame them. I mean, they say, what do you want? You want us to send 1,000 of our policemen and soldiers and there's nobody in charge? We need a government to tell us what to do. And right now there's no government.
Right. And by the way, if you want to help out, the Have Faith Haiti Orphanage, you have a website, right, where people can help out? Because you guys are definitely going to need some resources.
Oh, we need it every day. HaveFaithHaiti.org. HaveFaithHaiti.org. Thank you for that.
And so do you have a next step, Mitch?
Well, my next step is, when can I get back in there? You know, when will they open up some avenue so we can get back and be with our kids? We have contingency plans to evacuate our kids, but, you know, I'd hope that doesn't happen. We can't have school. So we have to have our nannies and our staff basically act as teachers because we don't want the kids to, you know, just live in fear every day. And, you know, I'm in touch with our staff, you know, 10 times a day, every day while I'm here. But, you know, my thoughts are with our kids and the other Americans who are down there. Brian, there's plenty of other people. I read a report where somebody said that, oh, they got all the Americans out. No, they didn't. There are so many Americans down there who volunteer with orphanages, organizations, water projects. There are Canadians down there, several thousand of them that we know of. There are other foreign nationals that are not able to get out and I'm sure are living in fear of what's going to happen next. And so we can't forget about them. This is not doesn't end because our group was able to get out.
Do your kids have security at all?
We have 24 security guards. That's where our money goes, you know, rimming the place. But, you know, it's not enough if you get attacked by a gang because the guns that one group has are different than what one of the other ones have, you know. And that's we live in fear of that all the time.
Mitch, it's great what you do. I'm glad you got out and I'm glad you're going to help out. And we'll look to stay on top of this because America can't look the other way. We have no choice. Thanks so much. Mitch Albom, thank you very much.
Brian.
Great job. Thanks for sharing your story. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Mr. Herr, classified documents were found at the Penn Biden Center?
That's correct.
They were found in President Biden's garage?
In Wilmington, Delaware, yes.
And in his basement den?
Also in the same home, yes.
In his main floor office?
Correct.
And his third floor den?
Correct.
At the University of Delaware?
Correct.
And at the Biden Institute?
Correct.
And they span over the course of 40 years. And if you read the transcript, people say, read the transcript. He looks fine, Joe Biden. He sounds fine. He does not sound fine. He cannot keep a train of thought. He is all over the place. I felt Robert Herr and his group's frustration. He's talking about electric cars. He's talking about men who are wearing the wrong jeans during a hydrogen fire that burned everything you could imagine. I mean, it was the craziest, these crazy non sequitur rants. Now, if it was intentional to throw off the interviewer, good luck with that. It obviously didn't work. It had the opposite effect. So you read the transcripts that they put out right before. They did not want them out, and he gave the Republicans a chance to read them ahead of time. And then you see Robert Herr in his remarks. And I'm going to play some more of it this half hour. Play it with Rich Lowry. Robert Herr is so impressive. You know, he wouldn't say everything the Republicans want, but he wouldn't say anything the Democrats want. You know, Adam Schiff, and you'll hear some of the sparring, tried to say you knew it would create a firestorm when you put this report together. You idiot. It's an investigation into someone's crazy, irrational, and possibly illegal behavior over the course of 40 years. It's not up to him to worry about a political firestorm. And this is a situation, and you're condemning a guy that did not charge the Democratic president, and you still have a problem with it. Can't have it both ways. Either he is too old and confused to try, or he's on top of his game and should be put on trial. Adam Schiff tried to play it both ways. Why that guy is still in Congress is blows me away. Rich Lowry, next.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The Herr report represents the complete and total exoneration of President Biden.
The special counsel exonerates President Biden.
So this lengthy, expensive, and independent investigation resulted in a complete exoneration of President Joe Biden. You exonerated
a conviction.
I know that the term willful retention has a...
In this case, did you reach a conclusion that this man was outright innocent?
That conclusion is not reflected in my report, sir.
Exactly. So it's very interesting. You mischaracterized the conclusion on a report. That's a new low. And then when he goes to correct you, you cut him off and say, I'm taking my time back. I think it's a new low, but Rich Lowry, seen it all, covered it all, as editor of National Review, joins us now. Hey, Rich.
Hey, it's pretty low, I'd say.
And that's as low as it gets. I mean, he's not innocent. We're not charging him. Doesn't mean he's innocent. He's not exonerated. And by cutting him off, we can figure it out. We know you cut him off.
Jay Paul did the same thing where you exonerated him, you know, and he's like, oh, wait a minute. She said, no, my time.
So, it's an interesting thing. They knew it was going to be bad, so they prepared some Donald Trump, mispronunciations or gaffes when he said Obama instead of Biden or Nikki Haley instead of Nancy Pelosi. Okay, congratulations. That is nothing to do with Robert Hur and his conclusion, because the conclusion was he's too forgetful, was him getting bailed out. The reality is his actions over the course of 40 years were irresponsible, and the confusion stopped him from being charged. I think they missed the ball on this one.
Yeah, so the confusion, and Hur also made it clear he's not sure the intent was there, although technically that's not really necessary to charge. And he said at some point, I believe, that a reasonable juror might have convicted Biden. So this was not a great day for Joe Biden. Hur is just – he's obviously – they wanted to portray him as a MAGA extremist, or he's in this to get a job. And the Trump administration, he's a very solid professional guy. So, some of the
more Johnson
and sure-footed testimony I've seen in Congress in a while.
So here is Jonathan Turley with his analysis. Cut 11.
Well, there was a bizarre disconnect after you listened to Hur. He laid out evidence that was remarkably compelling. It was like playing the game of Clue and having all the murder weapon, location, the suspect, but Colonel Mustard just couldn't remember how he got there. And, and he basically said, I just can't prosecute on this basis.
And he believes there was enough there to prosecute. Now, a sitting president being prosecuted over stuff that he stopped doing in 2017, I don't think that would have helped the country. But the reason for not giving it was obviously detrimental. But if you read the manuscript, I started hearing about the transcript and people referring to it, that it's really exonerated Biden. I thought to myself, let me read it. No, this guy is all over the place. He can't hold a thought. It is a commercial for Ritalin just to be able to get him to stop with the ADD. Talking about electric cars, Zoom, they go fast.
Yeah.
I went to Syracuse. I didn't pay attention to law school.
Yeah, all the rest. It's amusing, some of it. But on the key question of whether he didn't know the year that Bo died, it's right there, in black and white. And he got the month and the day, but he had no idea about the year, and no idea about the year repeatedly. The year is when he'd been vice president, which is shocking, which is not normal, and which justifies the verbiage that Hur had in the report.
Yeah, so here's the exchange from the transcript. So during the time in which you were living at Shane Bridge Road, and there were documents relating to the Penn Biden Center on the Biden Interstate or the Cancer Moonshot or your book, where did you keep the papers that related to these things that you were actively working on? Here's Biden. Well, I don't know. This is what, 2017, 2018, that area? Yes, sir. Remember, this is the time frame my son is either deployed or dying in. So it is, was. And by the way, there was still a lot of people at this time when I got out of the Senate, they were encouraging me to run, except the president. I'm not saying it as a mean thing. He just thought that she had a better shot at winning the presidency than I did. So do you see where he's going here?
Yeah.
I don't. This guy is just freelancing. And so I had at this point, even though I'm at Penn, I hadn't walked away from the idea that I may run for office. But if I ran again, I might be running for president. And so that what was happening, though, what month did Bo die? Oh, God, May 30th. So the question was, where did you put the stuff during the time in which you were at the Penn Biden Center?
Right.
I might run for President Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. That was so frustrating reading this.
Yeah, and he's wandered down, and he's brought up Bo, right? That's the other thing, the famous thing he said at the press conference when he was so righteously indignant, is that I was thinking, why the hell are they bringing it up? Well, he brought it up, and, in response to a totally innocent and relevant question. And, repeatedly, you're right, Hur has to say, well, I'd love one day to, drive an electric car, Mr. President. It's on my bucket list, but I do have this material to get through, and on and on.
So, we guys at home, this was, he actually said this. President Biden says one of the cool things about being vice president, you get to drive an electric car. Man, it goes so fast. And Robert Hood goes, excuse me, sir, I know one day I like to do that, but can we get back to the questions? Can you imagine this? Would Robert Hur must be thinking? Yeah. Well, this guy has lost his mind. That's what I think. Anyway, I mean, that's my impression. I read the whole report, and actually, I got through, I'd say, 90 pages of his rantings, and he doesn't come off hostile, ever. He looks like a guy that's just dying to talk to anybody, a guy on the bench that would just start a conversation.
Yeah, that's the way Biden's always been. It's just now it's kind of looser, even looser and less connected to the point than it's ever been. And again, just not knowing years, that's a real that's a sign of that something's probably up and it's not good.
Right. I just want you to Trey Garrity's analysis. Cut 13.
Look, he had a good night. The night of the State of the Union is what in law we call a lucid interval. I mean, congratulations. He read a teleprompter for slightly over an hour. But that is very, very different. I mean, the guy cannot participate in his own defense. How you can handle nuclear codes and run the world's most powerful country, but yet you can't stand trial, is a disconnect that most of us have a hard time reconciling. So, look, congratulations. You made it through a State of the Union, which is more than many of us watching were able to do. But I don't think it eliminates people's concerns about his acuity.
So where are we at? Now, yesterday, they passed the threshold, ironically. Both candidates have through. They're going to wait for their conventions and start campaigning. I mean, we know that I think he's got something scheduled for today. He's actually going to be out there. President's going to deliver remarks in Milwaukee. So what do you think Trump's got to do, and what do you think Biden will do?
Well, Biden is going to focus on Trump as much as possible, and the trick is for Trump to focus on Biden as much as possible and not focus on other stuff. You know, all he really needs to do is talk about the economy, especially prices and inflation, talk about the chaos overseas, and talk about the border. And, you know, this is true, and he also needs to say it, that the prosecutions are political against him. But otherwise, he should never post about anything or say anything else, you know. And if he sticks on that, his chances of winning the presidency increase by some, I don't know how much, but they materially increase. But Biden wants it to be all about Trump. He wants it to be all about the threat to democracy, et cetera, you know, how crazy and radioactive this guy is, to try to make him unacceptable. But the problem is that Biden will just never be normal again. You know, one reason he won in 2020 is just he seemed like the supposed safe alternative. That's just not true. Just given the record and given his physical and mental state, no one thinks of him anymore. So it's going to be much harder. Even though, you know, he's supposed to have the advantage of incumbency, it's much harder for him than it was in 2020.
It's going to be much harder, absolutely. Kamala Harris is not going to be any help. If I was Trump, and tell me what you think of this theory, I would name a VP. I would almost name a cabinet, because he's going to need some help. Between his court cases, they don't have a ton of money. I would go out there and start meeting with donors. You know, RNC is being totally rebuilt in real time. So how do you feel about that, giving up the tension of something to look forward to at the RNC that might be compelling, as opposed to meet my vice president, meet my secretary of state, meet my chief of staff? They're going to go out for – I'm going to need some surrogates out there. Do you think you need to do that, what I'm mentioning?
That's an interesting idea. You know, I think an advantage of doing that would be that if you can, you know, get impressive people to commit to cabinet positions. You know, you say President Biden, it's going to be so scary and chaotic. Well, look at this. You know, Mike Pompeo, who was great for 4 years, is going to be my Secretary of Defense, et cetera. That might be an interesting play. I don't know how much it helps in terms of surrogates, but it might help in terms of reassurance. Trump needs people, and they're already doing this to some extent. Remember the first 3 years of his administration before COVID hit, which obviously wasn't his fault, and focus on what they liked about the results rather than, you know, all the crazy stuff around the edges of it. So to the extent that he can get people to focus on that core of accomplishments and substance, the better for him.
So I want to talk about TikTok. Today the House is going to have a vote. And they're having some bipolar on both sides. But there's some Democrats and some Republicans that think we should not ban it. Or this is the restriction. Sell 80% of it and you can keep it here. If you don't, say you have 6 months to do it. If you don't, sell it for real money. Don't just sell it to a fire sale. It goes to 170 million people. But we cannot have China owning this company. So now you have a situation where Kat Kamick texted me and said, I think I have 300 votes. So let's say it passes the House. Chuck Schumer won't commit to doing it. The president says I'll sign it, but he still has accounts on it. Rand Paul is among Republicans, some Republicans that don't want it. President Trump's been all over the place on it. What do you think should happen, Rich Lowry?
I think that the House legislation should pass and be signed. I don't like TikTok, just substantively. I think it's toxic in terms of the substance, but that's not the issue. It's that China has this massive tool for manipulation, and it's a little bit like in the Cold War. If a Soviet company was going to buy CBS, we would have said, no, sorry, you can't do that. It's just too influential, and you're an enemy of ours, and that should be the attitude towards TikTok. And if they sell it, you know, I still won't like it, but fine. You know, they can do their toxic stuff on social media the way, you know, American companies do, but at least we don't have Chinese spyware in the hands of 170 million people. We don't have Chinese, China putting its thumb on the scale in terms of the content with anything sensitive with regard to China. So to me, it makes total sense. It's not a free speech issue. It's a national security issue.
So in 2020, we know Zuckerbucks played a major role. He put millions of dollars into key districts, and it absolutely had a role in the final outcome of the election. And also the shadow banning on social media platforms. Pervasive in Facebook, pervasive in Twitter. Now it's not a problem with Twitter and Instagram. So Trump feels differently now. He says, yeah, I'm worried about TikTok, but I do not want to give more marketplace to Facebook, who owns Instagram. How do you feel? I mean, he's got a case there, but somehow he's got to. I don't trust Mark Zuckerberg in this election.
Yeah, I just don't know that you know, if TikTok goes away, and it's not clear it would actually go away, but if it did, would everyone go over to Instagram, or would they go over to other platforms as well, or there'd be something new or something we're not aware of, but all the kids are, you know, so I don't think it's like a direct, okay. Anything bad happening in TikTok necessarily helps Mark Zuckerberg.
All right, who would you pick, Rachel, right now as President Trump's running mate?
Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Why?
Like she's a suburban mom. She's a good communicator. She's been in the national cauldron, you know, not as a principal, but she has a taste of it. She's a loyalist to Trump. She's winsome. She has great mom stories. She has a great story of surviving cancer. So and she's, you know, young. I like her.
I go Elise Stefanik right now.
Huh. All right.
All right. We'll see who's right, if either of us are right. I know it's going to go down to the wire. Hey, Rich Lowry, thanks so much. Exciting
thanks,
time.
Bro.
It's going to be a great 8 months. 1-866-408-7669. I'll play you some both sides on TikTok, too. We are just Talk to Mitch Albom, who was lucky to get out thanks to Corey Mills from Haiti. Mitch Albom has that orphanage in Haiti, you know, the famed author, talk show host. He is also one of the most respectable people you'll meet. So Corey Mills once again had to do what he did in Ukraine, what he had to do in Afghanistan, get a civilian corps together to save Americans in a war zone, because this State Department, this administration leaves them behind. That is inexcusable. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I didn't see it on the water.
Within seconds of Rodrigo Constain's new sailboat capsizing in Florida's Everglades National Park on Sunday, a crocodile clamped down on his leg.
I just tried to open his mouth, but I don't have the strength to open his mouth. He just opened the mouth, and I can release my leg.
With his leg free, the 68-year-old swam to the dock. He was airlifted to a hospital and treated for a leg wound. On the same day, outside Orlando.
And is this regarding a gator attack?
Yes, he took his hand off.
A more than 9-foot-long alligator bit off a man's hand while he was fishing.
I need medical. A man's arm was just taken off by an alligator.
Attacks by alligators are not common, by crocodiles even less.
So, can you give me some backstory on this, Alice?
No, so for all of our Florida listeners nationwide. Yeah, no, apparently this is the second time ever of an American crocodile attacking someone. He was the first guy was using his sailboat in the Everglades National Park, capsized, and then bit his leg. And then the second was just the ridiculous 911 call. And I mean, horrifying that a guy was fishing and an alligator came up and bit off his hand.
Well, what do you mean? Alligators usually bite, but crocodiles don't?
Apparently, crocodiles don't attack as often as alligators.
Okay.
Apparently.
Our but Florida listeners, I'm sure. Risk. The craziest thing is we sent Lawrence Jones to Miami for spring break.
What a bad assignment.
And they cut back. The security is so great that all there are is senior citizens. Nobody's there. So all Lawrence did today was interview security officials on how happy they are that nobody's there. And I'm saying, you know, they're happy, but you know who's not happy?
The restaurants, store owners, bars.
The hotels, yeah. Right? I mean, come on.
But, I mean, all the spring breakers just went elsewhere in Florida, though, right? Just right. But not Miami.
Well, Lauderdale and Jacksonville. That's what I hear. But they're not hanging out in the city of Jacksonville. I'm sure they're going to the beaches.
One would imagine.
Now, if it is, and WOKV listeners know this, with the Players Championship right there in Ponte Vedra, it shuts down traffic anyway. And now if you put in a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds, it is crazy.
The Players Championship, that's golf, correct?
Yes.
That's an interesting
mix. It's just short of a major. I mean, that's how big it is, even though golf is going through all these problems now. But, we'll see.
But Lawrence had a bad assignment. He had nothing to do except sit on the beach and talk to officials.
Right. And I guess evidently, even though he's in the prime of his life, he hurt his back throwing a football.
That's something that happens when you're like 40 plus.
All right. I see you pulled Zoe Kravitz's speech.
It's fun.
Is it?
I mean.
Zoe, about our father getting into the Hall of Fame?
Well, he got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
So let's listen. Cut 37.
I've seen the way you show up and take care of the people you love. I've seen your incredible dedication to your art. But mostly, I've seen through your shirts. According to my dad, if it doesn't expose your nipples, it's not a shirt.
So Lenny Kravitz's daughter, who he married the woman from The Cosby Show, didn't she? Lisa Bonet. This is probably the kid from Lisa Bonet.
I think so.
And he moved on.
Yes. But I mean, that's very funny. Her delivery was amazing.
Right. That is great. And it is true. The dad does wear see-through shirts.
He does. He likes his lace shirts.
That's the one thing I always thought about the situation.
Yes.
On
Jersey Shore.
New Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
Because he's known for his abs, right?
Yes.
When you get older, it's impossible to keep those abs. If you're known for your abs and your abs go away, what are you known for?
So you should be rather known for your nipples. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
It was a smarter move than Lenny Kravitz.
Much smarter move. I think that wasn't the moral of the story I was looking for, but thanks for playing.
You're welcome.
Brian Kilmeade, Joe. Keep it here.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Two great guests coming your way this hour. Thanks so much for being here. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, where I understand in Midtown Manhattan, the new focus is those people who aren't paying tolls with ghost cars. And now we told National Guard to go in the subways, but the guns are scaring people, so please don't bring them. But you can wear your camouflage. Fantastic. Feel safe now? Josh Rogan's coming up at the bottom of the hour, the Washington Post columnist. He really knows the region, Southeast Asia. Got to get his take on what's happening with China, this whole TikTok controversy. The President of the United States is going to be speaking today in Milwaukee. He wants Wisconsin. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Well, I think that what you saw today was really a great victory. I mean, this is a nomination that's been clinched this early in two decades. The president had a great day today. The Hur report, basically today, case closed.
Yep, that's Mitch Landrieu, spokesperson for Joe Biden. The stage is set. Biden versus Trump 2. As both officially line up, delegates and needed to get their party's nomination. We look at the stakes. We look at the game plans and what the next 8 months will be like.
Number two.
Guys, if you haven't called your representatives, call your representatives. There's so many small businesses on here. People are surviving off this app.
I was like, hey, I'm calling to stop the ban on TikTok. I will financially drown without this app.
And tell them, do not ban TikTok.
The vote looms in the House as TikTok and ByteDance have a choice. Sell 80% or have it banned. They come into town to try to save the day. The House should have about 300 votes. The question is, will the Senate take it up? The president's already committed to signing it.
Number one.
The Hur report represents the complete and total exoneration of President Biden.
The special counsel exonerates President Biden. Did you reach a conclusion that this man was outright innocent?
That conclusion is not reflected in my report, sir.
Right. That was the theme, Robert Herr. I read the report. White Democrats pretended it was in the report. A blizzard of accusations came at her. Mischaracterizations came at her. And Biden's classified documents are to blame for all of it because he had them with him over the course of decades. What we learned from the testimony, the transcripts and the Biden interviews and what it means for the 2024 in the Trump case. First off, there's a vote going on right now. It's to ban TikTok. You know, the deal I just discussed. Right now it's going on the House floor. Kat Kamik is sponsoring it. And already you have 196 who have actually you have 20 yeas, three nays. We'll see where this goes. It's obviously very early. Let's bring in Jonathan Turley, George Washington University law professor, who he was on all day yesterday giving his instant analysis on Robert Herr. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Your takeaway from yesterday?
Well, there was a truly sort of bizarre quality to the proceedings. You know, you had these Democratic members saying repeatedly to her, so you exonerated the president. And then he would say, I did not exonerate the president. They said, right, you exonerated the president. So it looked like they were just in two different hearings connected somehow simultaneously. The arguments made by the Democrats really did ring hollow with most people. It was very obvious what Herr was saying. It was very obvious what he was not saying. I mean, Herr said that he did not bring charges because he was not confident that he could get a conviction in court. That's a very different issue from what the White House said after the hearing. You had this guy, Sams, who works at the
Ian Sams.
White House counsel's office, saying, this totally cleared the president. Well, it just extended this disconnect. That's exactly what Herr said repeatedly he did not do.
In fact, let's hear Ian Sams. Cut 10.
I think the main thing to take away from today is two words for the American people. Case closed. When a prosecutor spends 15 months investigating a case only to determine that there is no case here and that there will be no charges and that the case is closed, it only affirms the innocence of the president.
I mean, he's a spokesperson. He's spinning, but he can't believe what he said. Anyone who read the report doesn't believe what he said.
Well, the problem that I have is that Ian Sams actually works at the White House counsel's office. This is a new thing. You know, the White House counsel's office historically has stayed out of politics. They have often refused to even be a public face at the White House. It was rare to see anything but the White House counsel sitting silently in a room. The Biden administration changed that, brought in Sams, who's not a lawyer, and he has become this virtual propagandist. I mean, he keeps on saying things that are not true, and he's doing it on behalf of the White House counsel's office, which is supposed to be protecting the presidency, not the president.
Yeah, I want you to hear. Yeah, the thing is, and I know you read the report, there are so many problems that Joe Biden brought upon himself because of his habit of taking classified documents. And if he doesn't take them, he makes notes of them and leaves with the note cards, which is just insane. Cut to.
Mr. Herr, classified documents were found at the Penn Biden Center?
That's correct.
They were found in President Biden's garage?
In Wilmington, Delaware, yes.
And in his basement den?
Also in the same home, yes.
In his main floor office?
Correct.
And his third floor den?
Correct.
At the University of Delaware?
Correct.
And at the Biden Institute?
Correct.
That cracked me up. I mean, that's the problem. And then when guys like you take look at this and analyze it, say, is it classified documents? Did you have permission to take them? The answer is yes, they were, and no, you didn't. How many times did it happen over and over again? In the transcript, did he come clean on any of it? No. He said over 100 times, 150 times, I don't remember.
No, it's an astonishingly strong case for prosecution. That's what came through. Is that when I was sitting through and listening to Herr talk about this, I was struck by how, as a criminal defense attorney, I would be pleading out my client on these facts. I mean, You have a 40-year pattern, starting when he was a senator, where he had to personally remove these documents from the skiff, continuing all the way through his vice presidency, and these documents being moved to every location where he also
yes.
moved. I mean, and then you also have the fact that evidence was destroyed. There was critical evidence in the possession of his ghostwriter that was the ghostwriter then proceeded to delete. You had the effort of the White House itself trying to change the report at the last minute. I mean, it's an extremely bad record for a defendant. And so that's the reason Herr had to talk about the diminished faculties of the president, because absent something like that, there was literally nothing
right.
that would counterbalance that evidence.
So if you were President Trump right now, you know that President Biden, if he has a stump speech with any mention of classified documents, he'd stay. You get the white out and you just get rid of that. Don't even bring this up again. It nullifies the argument, but it doesn't mean that Donald Trump is out of the woods. He's still got a case to win. Your thoughts about Donald Trump feeling today that there's a double standard?
Well, I'm afraid that they have completed the narrative by not charging Joe Biden, or at least saying that he could be charged once he leaves office. There is no way I can see to reconcile these two decisions. I can understand if two special counsels said, you know what, this is rarely prosecuted, this is not good practice, they've assured us it will end, but we're not going to bring criminal charges. I could see that. But to have one take the Biden record and say, I just don't think I could convince a jury, and have the other hit a president with a flurry of charges is really irreconcilable. And the thing is, if you want to charge and prosecute Trump for obstruction, do it. That's what all the Democrats were referring to yesterday. But that's not the same count. The problem lies in the fact that you're prosecuting Trump for his retaining classified material. So in my view, if there was any sense of balance, the Department of Justice would proceed only on obstruction and drop these classification and document charges.
Two quick questions. On the case that's supposed to start March 25th in New York, the Stormy Daniels case, the president petitioned to say, we got to put this on hold into the Supreme Court. Here's the argument and weighs in on immunity. Does he have a case?
Well, I don't get the feeling that judge is inclined to be very solicitous towards Trump, so I would bet against it. But, you know, the other problem is that the odds are against Trump on the immunity question before the Supreme Court. Remember, some of those justices may ultimately agree with the result of the D.C. Circuit, but disagree with the rationale. There's a lot of reasons why they may have said, we want to hear more argument and we want to issue an opinion. That doesn't mean that the president is likely to prevail. I think most people would bet against him because he made a very sweeping argument.
He wants to also have Michael Cohen kicked off the witness list, as well as Stormy Daniels, because he says they've lied before. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's going to go down like a lead balloon. The fact is, you often have.
Yeah.
Witnesses that lie, that comes up in cross-examination. The judges are going to say, call him a liar. Just do it on cross.
Georgia case, we're going to get it in the next few days. The judges guaranteed that. I'm pretty sure we've stopped hearing testimony. What are the possibilities? What are some of the outcomes we could be looking at in the Georgia case?
Yeah, this is a very tough case for this young judge. He's only been on the bench for a short time. Georgia has a remarkably ambiguous standard. It turns out that it is not clear whether the standard is that the court has to find an actual conflict, which is tough when you've got people saying they only use cash, or whether an appearance is sufficient. There are cases going either way. If it's the appearance standard, then both these people are going to be disqualified, in my view. I can't imagine how you could not see that standard satisfied. But if the judge says, I'm just going to go with the more, the sort of the higher standard of an actual conflict of interest, then he might keep them both in while saying in the opinion that he thinks that there would be grounds for them to voluntarily remove themselves. My problem with all this is I think there are now very strong there's very strong evidence that that one or both of these witnesses lied on the stand. If the judge believes that they did lie on issues like their relationship, then how can you believe the other stuff?
I know.
And so the question is, does the judge have to deal with that cascading failure that I don't believe that Willis and Wade were truthful on the stand, and I have to weigh that fact in looking at these looking at this evidence. Now, he might be able to pivot that to say there is this ambiguity on the standard, but taken as a whole, I have to disqualify both of them.
Everybody knows they lied. You'd say, I got to prove it. We all know they're lying. We have his best friend saying they're lying. We got his business partner caught showing that they lied. We have the pings that shows that they lied. And they felt above the law in Fulton County. And they felt great about being the first to ever indict a former president. So I don't know. If they're going to go forward with this case, I can't see people giving it the I can't see people really feeling as though it's fair to the president. And for those people who feel it's two tiers of justice, I don't think you're ever going to get them over it by letting these two go forward. The other scenario would be, we know you lied. You're off the case. Let's move the case to another county, correct?
Right. And then that prosecutor would be under an obligation to review for himself or herself whether this is a viable case to move forward on. In my view, this is a perfectly horrendous case. I mean, I've always been critical of it. It's not that there aren't crimes here. They do allege crimes that are fairly easy to establish against some defendants, like unauthorized access to voting machines. Okay, those are not particularly serious. You had a bunch of pleas from these lawyers, but they pled to stuff that didn't even require jail time. What they didn't plead to was the racketeering conspiracy. And that conspiracy is pretty thin soup. I don't see any connection between these defendants that would establish a racketeering conspiracy. As Andy McCarthy said, the first real connection is the fact that they were all charged together. I mean, I think that's accurate.
Right. And I'm wondering if it's there to flip. They've already had two cut deals, Jenna Ellison and somebody else, who said they just can't afford to play this out. So maybe they put 17 out there to flip and try to get more and more on the president. Could that be the case?
It could. But, you know, it's not clear what testimony they're going to get from some of these flippers. You know, the fact that they couldn't get them to plead to the racketeering charge is really interesting, because I can tell you, as a criminal defense attorney, in a case like this, that's all the prosecutors would likely talk to me about. They would be the beginning and the end of every conversation. They usually require your client to plead to whatever is the center charge, the sort of matinee item charge, because they want the plea to advance their prosecution. These pleas did not advance their prosecution in the sense of saying that these crimes occurred. So we're not sure what specifically they could offer.
Got it. Jonathan Turley, thanks so much. It's going to be a busy week. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
It already has been. All right. 1-866-408-7669. When we come back, I want to look into TikTok, the votes going on right now. I know it affects 170 million people, many of which have businesses on there, but I'm all for the ban. What about you? Don't move.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
The whole idea of boosters being able to contribute money to collectives and really which establishes a sort of pay-for-play model, which I don't think is in the best interest of college athletics in the future, nor the participants, the student-athletes themselves. Doesn't enhance them creating value for their future like, you know, we all were dedicated to for many, many years to try to help young people be more successful in life, because you're actually going to college to create value for your future.
Right. And that is Nick Saban, the most successful college football coach ever. left this year abruptly, said, I just don't like where the game's going because of NIL. And now the courts have ruled the NCAA can't really rein it in, and it can't set up categories and limitations. And so it's up to Congress now. Joe Manchin has mentioned this to me before. He's buddies with Nick Saban. I think they played college football together, to come up with a new system that works for everybody. As Nick Saban brought up, the football and basketball programs finance most athletic departments. The swimming, the golf, and others don't make money. Soccer, I'm a soccer guy. Most college programs, soccer programs don't make money. The football programs do. Now, if that revenue goes to the players, what happens to the rest of the program? And if I'm at the Alabama and I'm the quarterback there, and suddenly Louisville has a bunch of donors and they say, I want that quarterback at Alabama, then the quarterback goes back to the coach instead of saying, hey, coach, I know I've been here for 3 years, but I got a lot more money to go to Louisville. See, unless you can match it. Is that the image of college sports? Are you blowing up the image of the student athlete in doing so? Are you playing for minor leagues? Is this the AAA of the NFL? And does it change everything? That's what he's saying. Everybody wants players to get paid somehow, but it's got to be reasonable.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And the day they decide to weaponize that against us, to convince soldiers not to go fight, to convince their families that it's not worth going to fight, to get involved in our elections, to spread things that make us fight against each other and further divide this country or keep us distracted, or to convince American teenagers to kill themselves because the world's about to end, they have to do it. If the Chinese tell them to do it, they have to do it. It's the conduct, not the content, that we're talking about. TikTok was just a website where people could give their opinions, it's the control by the Communist Party. It's that conduct that we're going after.
Right, and that's when Marco Rubio is leading the charge on the Senate to get rid of TikTok on the Senate side. But right now, in real time, it looks like the House has the votes to ban TikTok. And here are the rules. It is going to be, you have 6 months to get rid, once it passes the Senate, and I hope it does, you have 6 months to divest yourself, not a fire sale, get top dollar, people pay for it. You can keep 20% of it, but the company has to be based here. Why? Because the Chinese news feeds will gradually, just like we're watching them, mobilize all their users to attack their congressional leader who's voting for this, the same way they're going to gradually change the dialogue in America. It's got more power than Fox, MSNBC, CNN, and all the networks combined. Joining us now, Josh Rogan, Washington Post columnist, best-selling author. Josh, welcome back.
Great to be back with you.
So, Josh, how significant is it that this is even up for a vote? And the word is, Chinese were surprised by it. ByteDance executives surprised by it. They thought they were out of the woods.
Right. Credit goes to the bipartisan Select Committee on the Communist Party of China, led by Mike Gallagher, Republican from Wisconsin, and Rajna Krishnamurthy, a Democrat from Illinois. What they did was they spent months and months actually working with Biden administration national security officials to come up with an approach that could pass muster legally, survive what's definitely expected to be a bunch of lawsuits from TikTok after this thing passes, if it passes. And then, you know, to surprise TikTok, because what TikTok has done, and it kind of proves the case that it's a threat, is that they've thrown millions and millions of dollars into an anti-legislation lobbying campaign. They actually use the app to prompt kids, children, to call their members of Congress, which is like actually backfired because members of Congress don't like getting screaming calls from little children. It's not really a good practice. And, you know, this is just the beginning of a long fight. But, yeah, suffice to say, all those lobbying firms that have been on TikTok's payroll for the last 2 years missed this. So, you know, it just goes to show you what a few million dollars gets you in lobbying these days.
So just so you know, we're not going to bat for Facebook or any other competitor. We're just going to bat for security. And do we want China to have this kind of influence? Hey, by the way, Josh, you know the China. Do they allow Facebook? Do they allow Instagram? Do they allow Snapchat?
Right. No, not only.
No.
Allow any U.S. social media, and their version of TikTok, which is run by the same company, is totally different and a lot less toxic because they realize how dangerous this can be for their children. But that's not to say that we should become China. It's not to say that we should start banning things just for the sake of banning things. This is a particular and egregious risk because we have many, many examples of the of the company already abusing this power, already using Americans' data in China in ways that they're not supposed to do, including by spying on the journalists who were reporting on TikTok. Okay, and if you just think about it for 2 seconds, we wouldn't let the Russian government control our national airwaves. We have laws that protect broadcast and radio from foreign control. And the Chinese government is worse. They're more powerful. They're more involved in foreign influence operations. And they're already using TikTok to shape the minds of millions of Americans and steal their data. Something has to be done about it. If this is going to be the thing that Republicans and Democrats can agree with, I think it's worth a shot.
All right. So Christopher Wray on Capitol Hill talking to the intel experts in the House as well as the Senate was asked about TikTok. Here's what he said.
I would just add that kind of influence operation or the different kinds of influence operations you're describing are extraordinarily difficult to detect, which is part of what makes the national security concerns represented by TikTok so significant.
Right. So the Senate might not pick it up. Now, by the way, there was more Democrats who voted against it than Republicans. So the Senate might pick it up. Chuck Schumer won't commit to it. Don't they see the danger? I mean, do they listen to these guys? And Avril, have they listened?
Haynes.
Yeah, Avril Haynes, I should say. Should they write out the transcript, hand it to him? There's a danger in TikTok.
Right. These are not Republican apparatchiks. These are the Biden administration's top officials, including Chris Wray, who was appointed by President Trump, but also Avril Haynes and Bill Burns, also not known as a staunch Republican. And you have to think that if all of these national security officials are saying there's a problem, that there might be a problem. But, you know, the bottom line is that there's a pushback now on both on the right and the left. On the right, there's a claim that it's impinging free speech. But I don't buy that. I don't think that's the way that this bill is crafted. I think that, you know, having our speech adjudicated by the Chinese Communist Party is the opposite of free speech. By the way, the Chinese Communist Party getting up and defending free speech is absurd on its face. And on the left, it's just a lot of, you know, we can't be so tough on China. We've got to, you know, be a little bit nicer to China. And so if you put those two things together, you get two sort of non-congruent arguments as to why we can't do anything. But the bottom line is that we got to do something. And you know, I know the Senate, you know the Senate. They don't like to do what the House does. They're liable to change it just for the sake of changing it. So there's going to be a few more steps here before this thing gets done, if it gets done. But I've never seen, you know, a 50-0 vote in a congressional committee before. That's what we got on this bill last week. 50-0. Have you ever seen that before? So there, you know, if anyone tries to tell you that we're going to lose the youth vote over, you know, trying to restrict TikTok, you have to ask them which party is going to lose it, because this is a bipartisan thing. So actually any political fallout would be actually met by both sides, if there is any.
But Josh, you got to admit, what a mixed message. President Biden goes on TikTok. He was on TikTok in the Super Bowl. He starts an account on TikTok. Oh, President Obama in 2022 was doing sitting with influencers, Indian style, by his desk with the guys with purple hair and nose rings on TikTok. And now they're saying, what's the problem? You know, why is President Biden, knowing the dangers, he's banned it from White House phones, but yet it's okay for him to start an account? You can understand why people are getting mixed messages.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to these kinds of things, we're only as strong as our weakest link. Some people are motivated by politics. Biden needs to prove that he's with it with the youth, so he goes on the app that he says is a threat. Donald Trump needs the support, presumably, of a lot of Republican donors who are invested in TikTok. I mean, that's the sort of regular, sort of everyday corruption that both parties engage in Washington that we've become so normalized to. You've got Susquehanna, KKR, big private equity firms who are heavily invested in seeing TikTok succeed as it is, and they're donating to both sides. And Occam's razor says that that's why Trump flipped at the last minute, and that's a problem. You know, you know, national security trumps politics and donations, or it doesn't. And I think, you know, both sides are vulnerable to this sort of corruption.
Right. And we'll talk about that. So now also came up, you know, are we going to continue to allow China to buy land near sensitive sites like military installations? Yeah, that's concerning. But is anyone doing anything? TikTok, that's concerning. But is anyone doing anything? The southern border. Do you have a theory, Josh, on why these thousands of Chinese are coming across our border with roller bags being dropped off in Mexico? Have they really turned on their country, or are they here to work for their country?
You know, I'm sure there's a mix of motivations from the interviews that I've seen, including on 60 Minutes, which actually did a great report on this. Most of them are just trying to get a better life. There's a much better life to be had if they sneak into America than if they stay in rural China. And, you know, the funny, not funny thing is that they're finding out about all the holes in our border wall over TikTok. All the TikTok videos are showing the Chinese migrants how to get in. So, you know, think about that for a second. But, you know, when it comes to Chinese acquisition of farmland, when it comes to Chinese acquisition of any American business, we're supposed to have a process in this country to vet these kinds of things. When a foreign company buys an American company or something that's near a U.S. military base, we have something called CFIUS, the Committee for Foreign Investment in the United States, that's designed to evaluate it. The problem is it's broken. It obviously doesn't work. They've been working on this TikTok thing for 3 years. They haven't come up with anything. There is no mitigation when it comes to TikTok. You can't say, oh, well, we'll put the data over on this server and not that server. You know, they have this thing called Project Texas with Oracle, which the Wall Street Journal says is totally non-functional. It can't guarantee the safety of Americans' data at all, according to the Wall Street Journal. So you just have to admit here that the processes that we have for defending our democracy, that's what we're doing here. We're defending our ability to have control over our society. They're not working. So that's why I think this bill fills a need that is desperately, desperately needing to be filled.
So a couple of things. First off, on Ukraine, it looks like they're going to get $200 million. They're going to repurpose some defense funds, and they promised to TACMs. That'll help them through the next few weeks. I don't know what your sources say about something coming together in the House, because Speaker Johnson said when he got the job, we want to fund Ukraine. We got to make sure Russia's not going to win. You know, Michael Waltz feels the same way. Lindsey Graham feels the same way. But with the border busted politically, and they're personally as extremely upset as every American should be about what's going on the southern border. This thing is in a standoff. What do you see happening?
Right. No, when I talk to the White House people, they think that somehow the Senate bill is going to get through the House. When I talk to the House people, they say there's no way that's going to happen. So it's clear that the two sides are talking past each other. It seems that Speaker Johnson is preparing his own national security supplemental bill. We don't know what's in it. It's not actually written yet. It's likely on the Ukraine side, according to my sources, to be very heavy on weapons, very light on like economic aid. That seems to be the way that it's going. Now, when that materializes, then they'll have to pass it and send it to the Senate, which again will change it and send it back to the House. So we're looking at months here before Ukraine gets any aid at all from Congress. That's a problem. That's going to be months of Russian advances and taking advantage of Ukrainian lack of ammunition on the battlefield. And sure, the Biden administration can send over a few missiles, but you know, that's a kind of a little bit too late, frankly. Like, imagine if they'd sent them the long-range missiles 2 years ago.
I know.
We wouldn't be in this situation.
With Patriots.
We are where we are. You know, my personal opinion is that we've got to give the Ukrainians the weapons they need to survive and to fight back Russian aggression. We got to do it right now. Mm-hmm. But the politics being what they are, there's going to have to be something on the border that goes with that. And there's no agreement on what that is. So it is a stalemate. And, you know, the price is being paid by Ukrainian men and women on the battlefield.
And Lithuania and France are meeting now to try to get some additional aid. Poland also is lobbying hard. Just back to China for a second. We know China had their major Congress meeting. They had two sessions, and at which time they did not have any press. They did not. They did it for years, for decades. They would open up the questions from the press. They didn't this time. Is that emblematic of so much change in China? Just one guy in charge. It's like Mao days.
It's getting there. You know what? You know, it's really hard to know exactly what's going on inside the top ranks of the Chinese Communist Party. But all signs point to the fact that they're taking what I like to call the great leap backwards. They're consolidating control. They have something called civil military fusion policy, which means that any company in China, including ByteDance, including TikTok, can be used by the government for any reason at any time. And there's nothing that they can do about it. That's what they chose. That's the path that they're going down. We can't change them. We can just protect ourselves. And if Xi Jinping wants to build a sort of Maoist totalitarian state economy, well, that's a pretty big gamble for him, because those kinds of economies don't do well in the world market. But perhaps he cares more about control than he does about Chinese economic success. Again, we can't change that. All we can do is acknowledge that and then realize that when it affects us, when it affects our security, our prosperity, our public health, and our freedom, that we have to do something about it.
Right. We have to divest big time. They're starting to divest from us. We should divest from them and pay higher prices, whatever it takes, manufacturing here, whatever it needs. I want to just bring it over to something else that's happening. You've heard this story before. We're evacuating an embassy. We evacuated in Afghanistan. We evacuated and went back in Ukraine. And now we're evacuating in Haiti. But we only got a portion of our guys on the embassy. We don't bring Americans out. Corey Mills had to scramble last night and pick out Mitch Albom, famed author, talk show host, who's got an orphanage in Haiti. Here's what he said happened. Does it blow you away that the embassy wasn't there for you and that the U.S. has really let it get this bad?
Well, I'm not political that way, and I don't want to besmirch the embassy other than to say, yes, in our case, they did not help us. I don't know what they could do. I mean, I've been in trouble down there many other times. We were there when the president was assassinated and the country shut down. The embassy wasn't helping us then either. I've just assumed that there's very little that they can do. I will say that, you know, we were in touch with them and they said, just stay there. We'll keep you updated if there's anything. Just stay there. You know, we're having discussions. Just stay there. And then they flew out. You know, we read the next morning that they evacuated in the middle of the night. But I don't know what they were supposed to do.
Your thoughts, Josh, about how the State Department handles these calamities?
Right. Now, I think one of the main functions of the State Department is to help Americans in need in dire situations. And you just have to look at what happened in Afghanistan to realize that our State Department is not doing that as well as they should. Are they responsible for every single American, every place in the world? No. But just look at what other countries do. You know, not to make a direct comparison, but you know, the Chinese government had a lot better record of getting its citizens out of some of these hotspots than the U.S. government. Why is that? It's just because they devoted the time and resources needed to protect their people. So, yeah, no, we can't do everything. But, you know, if the embassy is not there to help Americans get out when the stuff hits the fan, then what the heck are they really doing there?
I know it has to be. And finally, Israel, the president, this president trying to divorce himself from Prime Minister Netanyahu. It seems political and personal. And the word is the Senate's going to come in and say no more arms. Unless you promise not to invade Rafah. They got to go into Rafah or else Hamas lives and wins.
Listen, I think Biden has got the worst of all worlds. He's alienated the pro-Palestinian crowd, and now he's alienating the pro-Israel crowd. So what kind of political strategy is that when you think about it? You know, pick a lane. You know, now he's getting pressure from the left, so he's moving to the left, but he doesn't really have any. It would be one thing if this was done in a way that actually achieved the goal that he wanted, but he's not willing to use the pressure on Netanyahu to achieve what the left wants. Gotcha. So he's just going to make everybody in his coalition mad and reveal himself to be feckless and let Bibi humiliate him. Now, no matter what you think should go on in Rafah, you know, I happen to believe that the U.S. has influence in this, but only if it uses it.
Right.
And so I think the Biden administration has got to decide, are they going to go gotcha. Left, and or are they going to stick with Netanyahu? Right now, they're doing neither one.
Josh Rogan, thanks for the insight. Washington Post columnist, best-selling author, Josh Rogan, thanks. Anytime. Back in a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The Teamsters have had a really open process through this campaign. They met recently with former President Trump. They have met with some of the other candidates in the field. And, you know, they sat down with President Biden in private yesterday. I was at the meeting afterwards and spoke to Sean O'Brien, the union president, and he said, you know, look, they have to follow their process. They are going to poll their members, but don't look for an endorsement anytime soon. They have in the past traditionally endorsed after the summer conventions in August, and I think that's the timetable that they're looking at as well. I think within labor circles, most people expect the Teamsters to ultimately endorse President Biden here. But, you know, the fact that they are showing an openness, you know, creates this potential coup for former President Trump if he were able to secure their endorsement as the campaign is just about to kick off in the fall.
Yeah, I mean, that would be unbelievable. But Trump has never had a problem with unions. You can't get anything done in New York without unions. So for people to say he's anti-union, it's a tough sell because people deal with them all the time. And he's got that track record, too. By the way, quick note on that Georgia case, a judge has dismissed six of the counts.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show as we wrap up a very busy Wednesday. Busy since Monday. I'll give you some news I think it's important for you to get. Scott McAfee has just come out, the Fulton County Superior Court judge, and I thought, okay, here's his judgment on whether Fannie Willis and her buddy Nathan Wade will be on the case. No. McAfee wrote on Wednesday an order that six of the charges in the indictment be quashed against President Trump and three against President Trump and three against others. Because you remember they charged 18 people there. So six charges in question have to do with soliciting elected officials to violate the oaths of office. That includes Brad Raffensperger. So something's going to happen in that case, but that is some mildly good news for President Trump. And we're also seeing that the House bill on TikTok has just passed, meaning they're moving to the Senate now, and it has just been moving forward on path possibly to be banned. So before we get to Dan Crenshaw, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Well, I think that what you saw today was really a great victory. I mean, this is a nomination that's been clinched this early in two decades. The president had a great day today. The Hur report, basically today, case closed.
That is Mitch Landrieu. I've never heard such ridiculous spin, but that's what he's saying for President Biden. The stage is set. Biden versus Trump, too, as both officially line up delegates in order to become their party's presumptive nominees. We look at the stakes, the game plans, and what's next.
Number two.
Guys, if you haven't called your representatives, call your representatives. There's so many small businesses on here. People are surviving off this app.
I was like, hey, I'm calling to stop the ban on TikTok. I will financially drown without this app.
And tell them, do not ban TikTok.
Yep, the vote is here and it's done. Overwhelmingly, the House says we'll look to ban it. You have 6 months to find a buyer, not a fire sale, a buyer. You can hold on to 20% or else you'll be banned.
Number one.
The Hur report represents the complete and total exoneration of President Biden.
The special counsel exonerates President Biden. Did you reach a conclusion that this man was outright innocent?
That conclusion is not reflected in my report, sir.
Exactly. Hur stands strong against a blizzard of accusations on both sides of the aisles and mischaracterizations of his 400-plus page report. What we learned from the testimony, the transcripts, and the Biden interviews, and what it means for 2024, and the Trump case. He's got a document case, too. With me right now is Congressman Dan Crenshaw of Texas. Dan, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, good to be with you.
So I didn't see how you voted. I think I know how you voted, but on the TikTok, what did you say? What did you do?
Oh, I voted in favor, and we voted it out of our committee on energy and commerce, 50-0. So that pretty overwhelming support, and pretty overwhelming support on the floor as well.
Why?
Well, because look, I think a lot of people realize what TikTok is. And I'll explain it really succinctly for listeners. And look, a lot of people, I understand, use it and even use it for their businesses. They get it. I'm not saying there's no trade-offs here. But the reality is that you wouldn't allow the Chinese Communist Party to, say, put up a radio tower in the middle of Washington, D.C., and then put out whatever propaganda they wanted to millions of listeners. You wouldn't allow that. But that's exactly what TikTok is, and I'll tell you why. TikTok, they say, isn't owned by the Chinese. They say it's a Singapore company. Well, here's the thing. TikTok's parent company, which does control it, is in China. It's called ByteDance. And if you're a company in China, you are subject to Chinese laws, specifically the National Intelligence Act of 2017, which says that basically if you're a company in China, you have to do whatever we tell you, and you have to spy on whoever we tell you to spy on. And so that's a real problem. And now we know a few things, too. We know that ByteDance does have access to all of the data that TikTok collects. And TikTok collects more data than most apps. It collects a lot of things. And it uses that to drive its algorithms and basically make you addicted to the app. People love it. I get it. But here's the thing. You can weaponize that kind of tool. And the Chinese have already been shown to have weaponized it. And I don't want a situation or we're in an adversarial relationship with the Chinese Communist Party, and they have the ability to manipulate the minds and opinions of tens of millions of Americans. That's a really, really bad and scary tool for one of our adversaries to have. So that it's really that simple. Also important to note, this is not a ban on TikTok. This is a ban on adversaries owning TikTok. And so somebody else can buy it, and yep, everybody can continue using TikTok.
I know. It looks like Rumble is among the companies that want to buy it. I think a lot of people are going to make money on it. I want you to hear what – I know a lot of times you wake up in the morning, Danny, you go, I wonder what Ilhan Omar – how she would vote, and you try to build your life around that. Here's what she said before the vote.
Today we had an Intel briefing, and none of the information that was provided to us really was persuasive. What I do think that people are finding discomfort is the fact that for the first time in our nation's history, Americans have access to real images of the horrors that are experienced by Palestinians daily. And the onslaught that is taking place, this horrific.
So she says that that's why TikTok is great. And she saw no reason that the security was jeopardized.
Yeah, I mean, like, she must not have paid very close attention in the Intel briefings. And look, she's not on the Intelligence Committee like I am. And so she's like any member who's not on the Intelligence Committee is going to get watered down briefings, to be honest with you. And the reality is, too, is that Congress people can come out of these classified briefings and say whatever they want because they know that you don't know what happened in that briefing. And so that's why you hear these differing opinions. But she can't refute what I just laid out. You know, so you could make the argument that the Chinese haven't gone 100% and fully used TikTok yet to manipulate Americans. You could make that argument. My argument is that they can in the future, and that we have to be able to prevent that kind of thing. And I think that's what she's missing.
I mean, that's one thing that it's almost like what we were waiting for. Why wouldn't China or one of our enemies come up with some type of device that potentially could manipulate us and gather data? Like, why did we get to this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely genius. I mean, what do you think about what I wish we had against them? You know,
yeah.
I mean, we
well,
we,
they would have banned it.
Yeah, they wouldn't even. Yeah, of course they don't even allow TikTok in China. Actually, you know, that's what another thing people have to understand is they don't allow it in China because they think it's bad for their young people. And they don't want their young people communicating. They allow a form of it. I forget what the name is, but it's usually very, very much censored material. It's for like educational purposes. So they don't even allow it. They think it's bad. But they also are smart enough to realize it's probably one of the greatest tools they have against us. And that's why we have to act.
So I want to bring you to the border. And Brian Fitzpatrick has a bipartisan bill put out there. And just to give people an understanding, they're doing it. They're going around the speaker and trying to put this legislation on the floor for everybody to vote for in the House that essentially would put back in play Remain in Mexico, a lot of the Title 42 restrictions, not provide additional funding, but get funding to Ukraine. This is roughly what they put out there. What do you know about it? And will you vote for it?
Well, we don't want to jump down the discharge petition route yet, but we are running out of time. So there's a couple of bills out there to clarify for everybody. There's the bill that the Senate passed, and the Democrat leadership in the House wants to discharge petition that bill. Now, I don't like that bill at all because it didn't do anything for border security. It paid for Ukraine without any offsets at all. The Fitzpatrick bill is another one. It's definitely an improvement.
Oh, so you did not like the Senate bill, Dan?
No, the Senate bill didn't – because it didn't do anything for border policy changes at all. And so that's a problem. I don't think Republicans should get on that one. The one that you're talking about that Fitzpatrick put out there is definitely an improvement, but it needs to be improved further. And I think we have some ways to do that. I want to be optimistic here and say that within the next week that we have some opportunities to actually get something passed that pays for Ukraine but makes Russian frozen assets pay for Ukraine. So that's a big one that we would all like. The White House supports it. It's a Republican bill. It takes American taxpayers off the hook for paying for this stuff. But we also need border policy changes. And so we need to add some of those in there as well. We can't give up on that goal. You know, we all saw what happened with the Langford Cinema deal. People didn't like that deal. Got it. Let's move on. Let's find something that we can agree on and get it done, because this is one moment in history where we might actually get border policy changes, first time in 30 plus years. And I'm not ready to give up on that.
Congressman Dan Crenshaw, our guest. They got to also fix at least the holes in the wall and use the $650 million that is just laying there that this president won't spend because Donald Trump put it aside. The other major catastrophe in our hemisphere is Haiti. They have no government, run by gangs. We have Americans over there. And as usual, the State Department got themselves out, but they didn't get our Americans out. And there are still Americans on the ground. How do I know? Well, Corey Mills joins us this morning, and he personally got on a chopper and got Mitch Albom and his crew out, who have an orphanage and was stuck there, an orphanage in Haiti. Here's what Mitch Albom told me earlier. Does it blow you away that the embassy wasn't there for you and that the U.S. has really let it get this bad?
Well, I'm not political that way, and I don't want to besmirch the embassy other than to say, yes, in our case, they did not help us. I don't know what they could do. I mean, I've been in trouble down there many other times. We were there when the president was assassinated and the country shut down. The embassy wasn't helping us then either. I've just assumed that there's very little that they can do. I will say that, you know, we were in touch with them and they said, just stay there. We'll keep you updated if there's anything. Just stay there. You know, we're having discussions. Just stay there. And then they flew out. You know, we read the next morning that they evacuated in the middle of the night. But I don't know what they were supposed to do.
How about making sure that there's some resources for them? So Corey Mills takes money out of his pocket and they get an organization together that he was working with before he went into Congress, and he's in and out again.
Yeah, I mean, so we do have standards in place for how to evacuate Americans and how to use our military to do that when necessary. And it's like it's different for every situation, but it is disappointing to see the embassy. Every embassy around the world should have an exact count of how many Americans are in that country. That's one of the main jobs of the embassy. And they're supposed to be able to take roll count, basically, of who is where. The fact that they didn't do that is a very, very poor reflection on that ambassador and the State Department, especially when you're in a situation like you're seeing in Haiti, where you have gang warfare in a potentially completely failed state. Quite close to us, and I'm glad you're bringing it up, because this is not in the news enough. Some of the conflicts that are happening right in our backyard, and it needs to be talked about more.
I don't think you blame the Biden administration for everything that's wrong in Haiti for decades, but they did let it get so bad. And I'm watching a press conference, and they go, "Here's $200 million. $200 million for who? Are we going to give it to what gang member? Are we going to write the check to?" I mean, what are we giving the money to? One minute we can't give $1 to Ukraine without both houses of Congress signing off on it. And then he could write a $200 million check because Haiti's a mess. But what's the policy? We asked Kenya to bail us out. Now, the reason why people should care about this, especially you should care about your own hemisphere, but Haitians end up evacuating, going in boats, and coming here. And if you think we got a problem now, it's going to get a lot worse. You just asked Ron DeSantis what's coming his direction.
Right. No, and I don't think they've done enough. And I actually asked this question very recently to the administration. You know, what are we planning on a potential occupation or peacekeeping force? Because we don't want to lead it. The reason we're bringing Kenya in to lead this is because you don't want American boots on the ground leading this effort. You want it to be a Caribbean and Kenyan led effort. And that's been the conversation that's been had, but I don't see, to your point, I do not see the administration prioritizing this. And there are massive consequences that could happen with a potential failed state. Like you said, massive immigration consequences for the United States. So it's definitely something that we need to pay a lot more attention to.
Congressman, are you getting worried about your Republican Party? Ken Buck just resigned. He's leaving next week. Now you got a 2-seat advantage. I've never said, Kevin McCarthy obviously left. Mike Gallagher is going to be leaving. What's going on with the majority party?
Well, you might argue we really don't have a majority, considering how we act against each other and prefer infighting over beating Democrats. It's a constant frustration of mine. I don't want to see good people leave. It makes our job more difficult. That being said, in the end, even with a slim majority, the fact is we don't have the Senate, we don't have the White House. So no matter what we want to pass, you got to make a deal at some point anyway. And I think a lot of Republicans need to understand that. I think a lot of our voters are lied to in campaign season and told that we make promises that are just impossible to keep. And then, you know, the narrative in our own media and on the right wing and everything is that, well, Republicans just didn't fight hard enough, didn't try hard enough. You know, that's not always true. There's the reality of the political situation we live in, and there's the reality of the slim majority that we have in only one chamber. And you got to be shrewd and make the right kind of deals. Like, a perfect example would be the supplemental. Biden administration wants something. Well, we want something. We need to make a deal on that. And I think, I think we still can.
I think you got to, I mean, you don't hear this from me, but I'm wondering how many people can get elected if they say, I'm going to go in and I'm going to have to compromise to get something done. I'm wondering how many conservative Republicans would be elected.
No,
I don't know how many Democrats would be elected. I don't.
Because our base has been conditioned not to hear that, you know, you're right. You can't say that in the primary. You can't be honest with people. I'm honest with people and I get in trouble for it. So I'm on the radio right now being totally honest with you. But if you say that in a primary, they're like, oh, well, that person's not going to fight for us.
I know.
Well, I always ask people, are they fighting for you or are they fighting for your attention? There's a big difference.
I hear you.
Are they fighting for your fundraising dollars and your clicks, or are they fighting to actually get some conservative policy measures over the line? Because that actually takes some work.
Congressman Dan Crenshaw, who fights for the country in uniform and fights in Congress. Dan, great to hear from you. Thank you.
Hey, always good to be with you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Martha McCallum's going to be doing her show at 3 o'clock today, and she's going to be with us for the rest of the show. But Martha, I did something on discipline. I went a little long with Dan Crenshaw. So real quick, we just got some news. Hunter Biden has just came out and said, I will not appear in front of Congress with Devin Archer and all these other people who are getting their invitations. The guy that wanted to appear says, I will not go out in front of the cameras.
It's you know, you could like snap your neck back and forth following whether Hunter does want to be on or doesn't want to be on. It gives you a little insight into what it must be like to deal with him on a daily basis, perhaps. But he likes standing on the corner on the sidewalk on Capitol Hill. He likes popping in at inopportune times for dramatic effect, but then leaving when people start criticizing him. And now obviously the guy's not afraid of anything.
Right.
He's not afraid of any serious consequences. So, he's not going to show up.
Right. He didn't take the Fifth behind closed doors, which I found surprising. But I'm sure Lee's paying Abby Lowell a ton of money just to take his calls.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure they decided to get him not to show up. And you know why? Because a lot of these stories don't match up. And now at the point, Comer did his homework and his committee. They wanted to have all these guys talk at the same time and say, all these people can't be right. Somebody's not telling the truth.
Well, you know, I think they did pretty concerted work on those shell companies. I think it's pretty tough to draw these lines together.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I believe that the terrorist threat level that we're contending with right now is at a whole nother level from an already heightened terrorist threat level that we were seeing even before October 7th. You've seen a veritable rogues gallery of foreign terrorist organizations calling for terrorist attacks against us in a way that we haven't seen in a long, long time.
So Martha McCallum and Bill Hemmer are here, but listening to Chris Wray, it was hard with all the breaking news going on to listen to both Intel committee meetings with the higher-ups, the heads of CIA, FBI, DNI, and elsewhere, in front of a bipartisan non-political committee for the most part, except for the end on the Senate side, talking about how extreme things are right now. They essentially say that they've never seen it so many times, so many different ways. Lights are going everywhere, from the conflict since October 7th over there with Israel to our broken border and all the things that that invites, as well as everything that's in flames with Ukraine, Russia, and the challenge China always gets. Martha, with you, I know seeing in the little box Christopher Wray, talking in front of these committees is almost frustrating as much as you love to hear Robert Hur, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think in really in most ways, what was happening in the Intel hearing is more significant in the lives of Americans than what was happening in the Hur hearing, really, in terms of who it impacts and the potential safety threats that they were talking about. I also couldn't help but think about George Tenet pre-9/11 when I listened to all of them say that these alarm bells are going off. I think there's a bit of, you know, covering themselves and saying, we told you that we had alerts and alarms that we had not seen in a long, long time, and that we were now at a whole nother level of threat, as Christopher Wray says, post-October 7th. And all of this happens while we are watching people cross the border every single day, knowing that nearly 200 of them are on the terror watch list, and that they're trying to get into this country through that open border is very shocking. And also these communications between some of these gangs, which they brought up as well, and terrorist organizations potentially, is a very unsettling reality.
I would just add that the number of gotaways are stunning. Mm-hmm. In 3 years, you got 1.8 million people who walked into this country. They walked across an open field and gained access to a country they should not have been able to do. I think there were 1,900 in the past 30 days. That's insane.
Right.
Gotaways. You don't know who they are. You don't know where they came from. You don't know where they went. That's not a country.
Listen,
that's like an open field.
But until recently, you could not get Democrats to even comment on it. But ever since that bipartisan legislation came out, I was so disappointed. I watched the C-SPAN one on the Senate side, and Senator Kelly and Ossoff came out and say, you know, we had a chance to fix the border. I'm down there all the time. I'm so concerned about it. I have a chance to fix those holes in the fence. We haven't gotten to it yet. But this money would have provided that. And the Republicans walked away from it. I'm thinking to myself, that is so
insincere. That was Senator Kelly?
It's so disappointing.
Yeah.
When he got in, I said to myself, this guy's a military officer.
Listen,
who goes,
Brian,
to space.
There are 11,
you would think he put politics aside.
There are 11 gaps in the Yuma wall. And Senator Kelly ran in re-election saying that he would plug them.
None.
It's still 0-11 today.
So, and then I love Senator Rich at the end said, and they went to wrap it up, and Senator Warner got cut off. Senator Rich said, I can't sit here and listen to this. Playing politics. There was so many problems with that legislation. I don't care what Donald Trump said. I wasn't voting for that, and a lot of people weren't voting for that. Senator Langford put a good effort in it. That thing was not ready. I'm not voting for it. Wouldn't have fixed anything. Stop playing politics, because I was ready to make a statement that I watched Warner and Rubio on the same page. Martha, it was like heartening. They were together on this, as is Congressman Himes and Turner. You could not put a piece of paper between them on a lot of
it. But the Border Patrol chief was in favor of it.
Right.
Union chief.
And you know what he came out and
said?
He
was very close to Trump.
And know what he said? He said one of the things, watch his explanation. He said, it would have made things better. I got to get my guys some money. They don't get overtime. Do you know they don't get overtime?
No, it's you know what? I understand the division between his take on it and the politicians who you just described, because I think that any money coming in their direction is something that they're grateful for. What I don't like is that there isn't, you know, if we are under the kind of threat that Ray described yesterday, and we have a president of the United States who feels that he wants to use this as an election issue, and a former president who also wants to use it as an election issue. So we're going to subject the American people
to
8 months of an almost, you know, nearly terror attack. Then I find that very disturbing as an American.
Just want to fill you in on just what happened. Chuck Schumer was just asked to comment on the TikTok bill that just passed the House overwhelmingly with over 300 votes. He has just said, the Senate will review the legislation when it comes from the House. Not committing to bring it up.
Right. All right. I think it's an open question. What we were told this morning is that this bill had to get 2/3 of a vote. It was not a simple majority because of the way they conducted it, bypassing the Rules Committee. That's why we were looking at the total number, and we were thinking it would be about 280 to pass, which it did. But it got, I think it was like 352 or maybe even a bit higher when all the votes trickled in. That's a lot. Our guidance is that if you got over 300 votes, you would put pressure on the Senate to take it up. I don't know if he will. Maybe it dies here. The remarkable thing is that Joe Biden said, I'll sign it.
Yeah.
But his campaign 2 weeks ago just signed up for it.
Yeah.
So they're on the app to raise money.
He was on TikTok for the Super Bowl.
It's a confounding thing. 180
well,
degrees
therein lies, this is why you have Republicans and Democrats on both sides split on this issue. I actually thought that Noah Rothman wrote a great piece on this morning in the National Review, which essentially says, you know, so we're going to let, you know, young people who are calling the offices of members of Congress and threatening to kill themselves if their TikTok is taken away, essentially addicts, right? Calling and he said, if you don't understand, you know, the wider picture of who is behind all of this lobbying, it is the government of China.
Yeah.
And so this is like a bad movie. Okay. China does not allow its own children on TikTok. They have a totally different version that spits out a diet every day of Chinese history and math. They don't allow their own children to use this. Now, I understand.
Banned, you know, in India.
And former President Trump, oh, well, the kids go crazy for it. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
By the way, this just in, Senate Intelligence Committee Chair Mark Warner, Vice Chair Mark Rubio, they are endorsing this TikTok bill. So that's good.
Okay.
They put a lot of pressure.
Marsha Blackburn on at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and she and Senator Blumenthal have been pushing a bill to give parents more rights in terms of how their kids can use social media for years. For years. I mean, this is like saying,
so
you know,
imagine she's
I really think we should still let kids keep smoking cigarettes. You know, let them smoke as many as they want. You know why? Because they really, really like them.
Well,
they really like smoking cigarettes.
Well, you know, so for one of the first things that Trump did is we had to ban this thing. And Senator Warner said Donald Trump was right. We should have banned it. He's pulled off of it. And he says it has nothing to do with the guy, the donor that is a big investor in it. He says this. And this is what I see as more as a reason. He said, I don't want to give Zucker, he has a horrible name for him, Mark Zuckerberg. I don't want to give him any more territory. Facebook affected the last election. Instagram owns Facebook. I don't want to give them the marketplace because of what they did in 2020 and the Zuckerbucks into key districts made a difference.
Understood. First of all, not a lot of TikTok kids are going to be flocking to Facebook.
Maybe
right?
Instagram.
Now, Instagram potentially could fill this market. But why can't there be? This is about divesting. It's not about banning it. The first move is divestment from China. Why can't the United States of America and all the technology we have create our own TikTok free from the Chinese government? We ought to be able to do that.
Now, are you on TikTok, Bill?
I am not. I deleted the app 3 months ago.
Right.
I never had it.
I never had it either. But they say if you ever had it, you not only have to delete it, you have to get a new phone.
Oh, great.
Did you get a new phone, Bill?
I did get a good new phone, but I don't remember the date.
Right.
I don't think I downloaded it on this one.
So that's what they say. I mean, that it's going
to
live forever.
Yeah. To Martha's point about who was lobbying, who was calling, Kat Kamick from Florida was on earlier this morning. She's strongly in favor of this bill. She said it was kids who are age 15 and younger because not all TikTok users, of which there are 170 million in America, most of these TikTok users were given a pop-up alert on their app, which told them what's happening in Congress.
Yeah.
I think about that, right? Whether it's TikTok or whether it's Facebook or whether it's Instagram, mm-hmm. to have that ability to reach people is phenomenal,
yeah.
Okay? Now, Trump raised a ton of money in 2016 because of Facebook, and he did not want to get kicked off of the platform after 2020, and he was. And he knew that his path to raising enough money to mount a national campaign ran through Facebook and likely still does.
And is he raising money on TikTok now?
I don't know that.
I don't think he's on. I don't think the president's
on TikTok. I saw a clip last night. He's back on X because he sent that one tweet. Mm-hmm. And I think they're on X too through Trump team or Team Trump, because that was the video he recorded last night. When he
wasn't on True Social?
No, it was on because we thought it was True Social, and it was I think it was Team Trump
really?
On X. So
was it on both? It was probably on both.
Well, they just met with Musk last week. Maybe that has something to do with it.
Maybe.
Well, there was discussion that he tried to get Musk to buy Truth Social last summer, which broke yesterday as well, but that didn't go anywhere. So he's clearly looking for an avenue to reach the kind of people he's going to need to raise money.
So Truth Social is now worth about. It looks like the merger is going to happen. And it looks like it's going to be worth, he can't sell for 6 months, but it's worth about three to thrive.
The merger with X?
No. The parent company is buying Truth Social, and it looks like Trump's stake will be give him between $3 and $5 billion.
Yeah, it is team Trump. So that's how he gained access to that. By the way, they put a bid on. They're trying to put a bid on the table to buy TikTok. Would that not be a fascinating thing? You want us to divest? Well,
that's
buy
what
you.
Should happen. Oracle had said a while back that they could do the
Rumble wants
the
it.
Domestic infrastructure
sorry,
for
that's
TikTok.
What, that's what I meant. I apologize.
So that they wouldn't have to, you know, divest it. Force it to divest. What are we afraid of?
Nothing. Martha, I 100% agree. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, people are paid to lobby. Trent Lottis, somebody, Joe Crowley. Are paid a lot of money on Capitol Hill. These guys lose their jobs and make more money as lobbyists. Nothing against them. They do it. But I just think when it comes to, hey, sorry, ByteDance, you're owned by China. I know it's a direct line to the Chinese government. I know the news feed. Look, I think if you do the forensics, my sense is on the Palestinian anti-Semitic pro-Hamas protests in this country, I bet you most of them germinate from TikTok because they're all young. They all have some type of they're all getting some type of news feed we don't get. I mean, who knew that this Palestinian sympathy ran through Hollywood, right. New York, every major city in the country?
Yeah. And as was pointed out today, you know, you've got like 10,000, 60,000 people getting their news about what happened in Gaza, the IDF invasion. And then this person, News Daddy, who has 10 million followers on TikTok, puts out his own message on Gaza and 10 million people watched what he had to say about it over all of these other legitimate news organizations with, you know, years of studying all of this.
But of course, as Bill Hemmer would agree, nothing is more powerful than the story at 3 o'clock today.
Yeah.
Right.
Fact.
100%. The news mom.
Oh, yeah.
Back in a moment.
On the road to 2024.
They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. There's never been anything so conclusive.
Trump is the presumptive nominee.
Rematch 2024 is on Trump.
Oh, it's all going to work out. We're going to come out so good. I'm more popular than I ever was.
Biden.
Well,
Democracy 24. Right here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
We are in the Arctic Ocean, several hundred miles north of Alaska, on an active ice floe that's moving slowly through the Arctic Sea. We came here with the U.S. Navy. They come up every 2 years and they run Arctic drills throughout the area. I see a negative 18 degrees on my thermometer here right now.
So, Bill Hemmer, that was you in the Arctic?
That was a warm day.
Right? That was a warning.
That was a warning. When the wind blows, it goes to minus 50 quickly.
And how did it feel?
By the way,
you had a great coat on.
There's nowhere to hide.
Amazing.
It's all flat, right? There's no clouds. There's no mountains. There's no building to jump inside. It's just like,
what were you scared at any point?
Good luck.
Were you scared at all?
I was embedded with the U.S. Navy. We're there to do a story on what the Navy is doing. They do military exercise in the Arctic every 2 years. They work with scientists to try and figure out how the Arctic Ocean is changing or not. Open for debate.
Phenomenal.
And then we flew north. We kept flying, guys. It was just ice forever.
Wow.
And then we choppered to meet a USS Hampton, which is a nuclear submarine. And we met the 150 sailors on board and spent
amazing.
The night. And I tell you what.
How were the accommodations?
I mean, of all the experiences that we've had in our lives, this was about as challenging as it gets.
Were you in a net? Did you sleep in a hammock?
We slept in a room. We had 9 bunks. You had about 18 inches of clearance on each bed. And I ended up with the one on the bottom, okay? Mm-hmm. It was bottom, middle, top. And I said to the guys, okay, I'll sleep here. That's fine. You know, we'll figure it out. So a couple hours later, I said, boys, what do I need to know about the bottom bunk? And they said, don't sleep on the edge. Sleep up against the wall. And I said, why is that? I said, because the guy above you and the guy above him are going to use your bed as their ladder.
Right.
And you don't want to get stepped on.
They're going to step on your head.
But I did sleep for 5 hours, which I was very
That's
proud of.
That's pretty good.
Very cool, moving 350 feet underneath the Arctic Ocean.
Incredible.
And were we
Sounds
able to see?
Under the ice? Nothing.
Nothing, just black.
Once you drift away from the ice pack on top and start to submerge, what the Navy would do is they would shovel this huge arrow on top of the ice with an X. And so that was telling the submarine where they wanted to meet up. And this is because they want to break ice at 3 feet, but no less than 2 feet. It's hard to find, right? 3 feet, 2 feet. And the reason is they wanted to be thin enough to break through the ice, but thick enough to hold that 7,000-ton vessel in place in order for the chainsaws to come out and cut away the ice and get on board, or if you're disembarking.
How did you enter the submarine?
From the hatch.
What brought you to the submarine then cross over and enter?
We were in a plane. We went to this camp they set up called Ice Camp Whale, appropriately. And then we chopper to another location and wait for the submarine to break through the ice. And then
when are we going to see this?
Wow.
We're doing a big Fox Nation deal in mid-April. Then America's Newsroom on Friday. We're going to run a little piece and give you a little taste of it. So it was awesome.
Can't wait to see it.
I learned so much. It really piques your curiosity about so many things that you never really think about before.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Martha, do you also have an Arctic story, or do you want to just talk about your story at 3 o'clock?
No, I have not been to the Arctic. I have a friend who just went to the South Pole and said that was phenomenal. So I'm going to have to put it on my list to get to one of these poles, but I'm going to bring Bill Hammer with me when I go north.
I'd like to go to Montauk. That is unbelievable. It's so cold right now.
It's kind of far out for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I hate leaving home. So
I'm going to talk to Marsha Blackburn, the senator, about what's going on with TikTok. We're going to talk to Jack Keane about what's going on in Haiti and how it relates to our open southern border as well. This is an extremely volatile situation. And we're going to be all over both of those stories today.
That's going to be big. And I'll tell you what, there's so many moving parts today. We also found out Hunter Biden will not testify in front of open public. And we also found out that three charges will be dropped in Georgia on Donald Trump for now. Three more on other people being charged on 17. And sooner or later, we're going to find out if that judge is going to let Bonnie Willis and Nathan Wade stay on the job.
Care to make a prediction?
I think they should get ahead of it and both say, we don't want to do it.
I think she stays.
You think she stays?
I think the judge is going to split the baby on this and give a little to the Trump team and give a little to the prosecution.
Kick Wade off and not her?
Not sure about that, but I think Fonnie Willis is on.
Well, he'll have less his car accidents and wills, Nathan Wade. That's his experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Brian Kilmeade Show.
Thanks, Brian.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.